We're talking today with Dr. Gail Steckety, who is Dean and Professor at the Boston University School of Social Work. Dr. Steckety is on the Scientific Advisory Board of the International OCD Foundation, and she has authored hundreds of articles and chapters on anxiety, OCD, and related disorders. Among her many books are The Handbook of Hoarding and Acquiring, The Hoarding Handbook, A Guide for Human Service Professionals, STUFF, and Compulsive Hoarding and Acquiring, Therapist Guide and Client Manual. Today our topic is hoarding in older adults. Dr. Steckety, thanks for joining me.
I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. Can you describe hoarding, especially in distinguishing it from collecting or just being messy and disorganized?
Yes, hoarding has several features that are fairly distinctive. One is that people acquire too many objects and then they have difficulty getting rid of those objects in a way that is atypical for other people. And the acquisitions that they have are quite different from the acquiring of objects by a collector, for example, where they're trying to have a broad array of all of these specific types of items, but not lots of the same item, and that's not typical for someone with a hoarding problem. And then, of course, the difficulty discarding items means that they develop a tremendous amount of clutter, and that's the hallmark feature of hoarding. Occasionally, very, very rarely, you'll see someone with an awful lot of stuff that is very well organized. And we're not quite sure what that is yet, but for the vast majority of people with hoarding, the clutter is in complete disarray, disorganized, and spread around almost all of the home.
Okay. Is the disorder more common among older adults than younger people?
Not necessarily. Onsets occur in people in childhood and in their early and late teenage years, relatively rarely after age, let's say 40, for example. So the problem is there in mid-adult life and continues into older life and appears to gradually worsen as time goes on. So we may think that it's more common in the elderly population simply because there's more of it, it's worse problem, but in fact it is almost always developed much earlier in life.
Do we know what can trigger someone to start hoarding?
We're not completely confident about this yet, but we suspect that there are indeed, we are sure that there are biological vulnerabilities. Hoarding runs in families, so we see genetic factors playing a role there. We also see early histories in which people have suffered a certain amount of loss or a chaotic upbringing, lots of moves, for example, in which objects were lost in transition and so forth. But there are undoubtedly a wide variety of sources of the problem, the vulnerabilities that we like to think of. But the biological features we're pretty sure of at this point.
And can I ask you how you've discovered the biological features? How do scientists identify those?
There are several genetic studies out at this point, not necessarily clearly identifying the location of where all the genetic elements are, but good, strong suspicions in some areas that are going to require further study. I'm not a geneticist, but I strongly hope that my genetics colleagues get some funding to do that work because I think it would be very, very helpful to the field.
Mm-hmm. What other symptoms can accompany hoarding?
The most common comorbid problem is major depression. And that's in up to half of the samples that we have worked with in both treatment studies and psychopathology studies. The other common conditions are typical, for example, of OCD. We see about 25% with social phobia. Similar size group with generalized anxiety or worry, as it's commonly known. And then a much smaller percentage, probably between 15 and 20%, will have other types of OCD symptoms. But as you can see, that's a very small proportion. So the majority of people with hoarding will not have any other types of contamination fears or problems with checking or ordering, et cetera.
Certainly not ordering. Can you address what some family members can do to stage an intervention or what else they can do to help loved ones who are hoarding?
Right. Well, let me just say at the outset that the thing they should not do is clean out the house without working with the person who's got the hoarding problem. That doesn't mean in some cases, in severe cases, a clean out is warranted and even required by the public health department or some other regulatory agency. The fire department may require certain movement. The best thing family members can do is get educated about hoarding to understand why people do what they do. I know it's completely frustrating to live with someone with this problem. And I don't think family members should feel unempowered to engage in some kind of intervention with them. But strongly urge them to get educated, to take a look at the book called Digging Out, for example, by our colleagues, which is very, very helpful strategy for family members to use the techniques that they describe in there.
Can you address effective treatment options and describe how they work once somebody has accepted the notion that they need to get help?
Right. At this point, the pharmacological interventions are limited. I know that there are some studies that are starting to show that there may be some medications that will have good effects here. The SSRIs, there's mixed information, some studies showing that they're not helpful and others showing that they could be helpful. We need a lot more research in that area to help us with that, and these drugs will need to be targeted at the fundamental biological elements of the problem. So the treatment that's probably most widely used at this point is cognitive and behavioral. It has a mixture of interventions that include motivational interviewing, because insight is often a challenge for people with hoarding. They seem to be, a number seem to lack awareness that, you know, they have a serious problem. When they do have awareness, that's very, very helpful. And then they can use skills training for organizing to help them be able to sort and keep things in order. We have lots and lots of behavioral practice doing that sorting and moving things from one part of the house to the other where they belong so they can be kept together and people can see what they have. We do use some cognitive strategies, probably not as advantageous in older adults, where I know that ongoing research is suggesting, at least the pilot data so far, that some cognitive rehabilitation strategies may be particularly helpful to help people stay on schedule, to continue to do homework assignments, and so forth. And of course, we do non-acquiring. We like to do our non-shopping practices, for example.
And non-shopping means what?
Means going into places where people have typically acquired more than they need and helping them contain the urge to acquire. And that means being exposed to those situations without actually acquiring. Oh. And pretty much talking aloud as they struggle through the process to help manage the very strong positive emotions about acquiring. And of course, there are many negative emotions that go along with the process of trying to get rid of items or trying to resist acquiring.
Is there any way you can put a time frame on something like this? Is there a typical or a hoped for outcome? How long some kind of treatment that you've just described mm-hmm. might take?
It's a bit variable, but the individual treatments we've done are around the 25-26 session area. When we do group treatments, we usually use 20 sessions of treatment in groups with home visits happening by somebody who's trying to assist in the home. We've also done some studies. Randy Frost and others have done studies on the Buried in Treasures is our self-help book, and the Buried in Treasures workshops, which are led by non-clinicians, lay professionals, paraprofessionals, or people who have a hoarding problem who have recovered from it. That's been a very effective strategy. And those are being suggested as probably around 15 sessions for those Buried in Treasures workshops. Okay. They yield good results, but the results often take longer than the intervention itself, as people need to continue to practice afterward. I'd say that for people with moderately severe clutter, we're looking at a year's worth of time in order to really make the house look nice mm-hmm. and people have a full set of skills that they're confident in and can go forward with.
And you mentioned homework. Can you talk about what that entails? Mm-hmm.
It depends on what part of treatment they're working on. So if it's non-acquiring, then the homework is to be with someone and go out to those places and just not buy, or limit the buying to the minimum of what they actually need. For example, not seconds and thirds of things, but just what they need right now. They might have homework to practice the skills, so they might go home and start working on their organizing system to make sure they know what's going to go where and how they're going to store it and what items they need for that storage purpose in the home, file cabinets, bookcases, this kind of thing. And then, of course, the practice sorting. So what area of the home are you working on? Are we in the kitchen? Are we trying to keep the kitchen table clear? So first we have to clear it and move things to the right places, and then so forth. So homework matches what's done in treatment.
And is this something that a family member can help with, or are there other ways that family members can support the person in treatment?
Indeed they can. And of course, the family members who help should be the ones who are calmest and most able to manage that strong negative reaction that so many of us would have. But a number of family members can be quite supportive in this process and really be helpful. The important part there is not to try to make the decision for the person with hoarding. Decision-making is a hallmark feature of hoarding, and people must learn those decision-making skills. But we can facilitate the process by asking useful questions, for example.
Okay, so people can make a total change, would you say? Or I'm thinking, what can a family member expect to see, to call it a successful treatment?
First task is to make sure that all of the safety concerns are managed. So can you open all the windows, walk over and open all the windows? Can you exit the doors without interference? Could a medical person with a stretcher come in case there was a medical emergency? Safety issues first. And then after those are dealt with, then the family member can simply be a supportive other present in the room while the person with hoarding is sorting, help move things, help get the trash out when the trash is ready to go out, and so forth. Do all those sort of facilitative functions and do a bit of cheerleading. You know, nice job, you got a fair amount done. This looks great, and we'll do more tomorrow.
Okay, so someone's on the path to recovery. Let's say there's a relapse. What's the best step for a family member to take?
For relapsing problems, meaning someone's kind of going a little bit backward, one of the important pieces is related to the motivation to help the person with hoarding keep their goals and values in front of them and ask those questions. Remember when you started this process, you told me that, for example, here's just one example, that you wanted to be able to have the grandkids over. And so I'm just wondering, I see what's happening here with this room in the house. Did you want the grandkids to be able to use it? And especially if that's a living room, then that's an important part, or the kitchen, very important part. So the goals and the values help remind them of what those were.
What would you like to see in the way of novel treatments or new research or anything else in your wish list?
Well, right now we are developing a treatment of the cognitive behavior therapy that we use standardly, which has worked well for hoarding, but not completely well. You know, we've got a lot of people improving. We'd like more. We would like to add case management to that. So we're very interested, and we've run a couple of pilot groups where we have a case manager who does the work in the home and then also interfaces with family members if there are family members present. That seems to be adding a significant benefit because, of course, hoarding does not occur all by itself. There are lots of accompanying problems that also need attention. And it's hard for someone with hoarding to stay on task and keep at the work on the clutter areas while they're also trying to figure out how to manage finances because they've got a lot of credit card debt, how to deal with some of the health problems that are preventing them from engaging in some of the work that they should be doing and so forth. So we'd like to see that move forward. And of course, we'd like to see more work on the pharmacological end of things to see if we can get maximum benefit to assist with the treatments.
That sounds great. We'll look forward to that. Thank you, Dr. Steckety. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.